What's up, everyone? Welcome to another edition of the Locked On Phillies podcast. I am recent Temple Media School graduate and lifelong Phillies fan, Dan Wilson. And again, today's episode, this is part two of my conversation with Megan Montemaro, who covers the Phillies beat day in and day out for The Athletic. In part one, we discussed the Dave Dombrowski hire, as well as some JT Realmuto. In part two, we really got into the bullpen, which in my opinion, perhaps maybe because of all of the Realmuto news and the news about a new president, that is something that certainly, if the Phillies are serious about winning in the near future, needs to be addressed. I don't think I need to present you any further information on how bad they were in 2020. So we got into the bullpen, the pitching staff as a whole, and how Dombrowski may address that, the pros and cons of Dave Dombrowski, and also a little bit more about his background and adventure he kind of had. We get into that in segment two, but I'll shut up here. Part two of my conversation with Megan Montemaro.
I did want to touch on that uncertainty. Like you said, the DH, as you mentioned earlier, you know, obviously there's contributing factors in the world right now, how widespread this vaccine becomes. That's out of Major League Baseball's control. But in terms of things of how many games they're going to play, how many people are going to be allowed in the stands, which again, less than their control, but things like the DH, three batter minimum rules that were used this year. Are you surprised that these things are kind of still being speculated on now on December 17th? And also we heard recently some owners don't want to start the season until May. Like, when are we going to have a definitive, like, this is what baseball is in 2021 and moving forward?
I mean, after what happened in the summer, I'm not really surprised at all because, you know, the league and players union clearly don't trust each other. They don't have a good working relationship. But yeah, I mean, it certainly has huge implications, especially if you're an NL team. I mean, for the Phillies, it saved them last year that they could play Andrew McCutchen there, you know, basically 50% of the week. And, you know, then when Harper's back started acting up, that they were able to keep him in the lineup by having the DH. So, yeah, I mean, it certainly has huge competitive implications. But I'm not really surprised, even though, like, it seems pretty basic and things should have been resolved by this point, that they're being drawn out and there's no clear sight to resolution.
Yeah, I guess I just don't understand how teams are supposed to value, like, forget the fact that they don't know how much money they'll have coming in next year. That's kind of all uncertain enough. The fact that Major League Baseball isn't making whatever they can, at least consistent or set in stone in either direction, I guess is a little ridiculous from my perspective, but like you said, maybe not necessarily surprising. In terms of, I wanted to go back also to what you said about maybe they don't jump on Realmuto as much as they would because they're waiting maybe for a year or two down the line. If Dombrowski, you mentioned also that this is an important three-year window, which I agree with in terms of the age of Bryce Harper, the age of Aaron Nola, the age of Alec Bohm, the age of Rhys Hoskins, all kind of in their primes right now, but maybe the depth on the team isn't where it needs to be to make the playoffs, regardless of how big the playoffs are. They missed an expanded postseason this year. We don't know necessarily what it's going to go back to, how that team would have fared over an elongated season, which is really just a regular season. Next year is a big shortstop class. Now, were you surprised that, A, they didn't offer a qualifying offer to D.D. Gregorius? And number two, would they go after one of those big-time shortstops a year from now and kind of, quote-unquote, waste another year of this Coors prime?
No, I'm not surprised they didn't offer D.D. a qualifying offer. I mean, almost $19 million for a team that at the time, like, you know, late in the season was already, you know, saying how they were having thoughts about, you know, financial impacts. And at that point, late in September, they were already notifying employees that there were likely going to be layoffs. So I'm not surprised. I mean, in a normal year, maybe they would have considered it a lot more, but I think that was a pretty easy decision for them to not give him a qualifying offer. I don't see him getting $19 million in free agency, you know, maybe over a 2-year deal, but I don't think anything close to that on a 1-year contract. Sorry, repeat your second question.
So the second question was, would they go after one of those big shortstops? Because right now, if they don't sign a shortstop this year, I mean, I'm looking at opening day lineup 2021. I think that's a vote of confidence for someone like Scott Kingery, whether Segura moves back to shortstop, he's starting at second base. Does he move back to center field? They kind of had that Quinn Haseley platoon going last year, but someone like him has to secretly be hoping for this, because that's for a guy who did not have a good 2020 at all, looking for maybe some more regular playing time, barring Dombrowski going out and signing someone.
Yeah, I mean, I think because you have Bryson Stott, who, you know, if you think he can stick at shortstop and you hope maybe, you know, 2022 he's ready, or, you know, if you do sign next offseason one of those top shortstops, you can either trade Stott or move him to another position in the infield, second, third base, depending on what you do with Kingery. So, yeah, I mean, maybe they look for like a 1 year stopgap, you know, like somebody like Freddie Galvis, where maybe you try to optimize defense at that position and hope that, you know, you can make up offense elsewhere. Maybe by addressing the center field situation, where maybe that's a little less costly. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. They don't really have a ton of internal options. I would be surprised to see Segura back at shortstop, because they've clearly moved him off there for a reason. And I don't know if Kingery is the first guy that I would play there. I mean, granted, he didn't look very good at second base defensively this year, but I have a hard time, you know, accurately evaluating his season because of the COVID stuff. And then I think he had like a shoulder back issue at some point. So yeah, if you're the Phillies, you are really banking on Kingery bouncing back and being somewhat of an average player, because I mean, even just being average from him would really be a boost.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either. A few names have been floating around for defensive shortstop, whether it be Freddie Galvis. I know Andrelton Simmons' name has been floating out there for a while, and also going to center field, the defensive center fielder, and someone like Jackie Bradley Jr. I would agree that they probably shouldn't, that they move Segura off of shortstop for a reason, probably should not go back in that route. That's kind of why I was, maybe not surprised isn't the word, but I guess annoyed from a fan's point of view that they didn't give that 1 year stopgap to Gregorius, even if it was a little bit more money that he would get on an average annual basis in like a 2 or 3 year deal. It seemed like, okay, here's a 1 year deal that would take him into next season, where there's a big shortstop class and you would have Bryson Stott kind of coming up at that point. Like, it almost seemed like the stars aligned a little bit for that. They elected not to do it, so now it leaves questions there. Now, flipping over kind of to the pitching side, someone who they did end up bringing back in the form of tendering his contract was Vince Velasquez, who obviously has been with the Phillies for a while. Most people, I think, kind of know what he is. Do they try and booster this starting pitching staff, and to the point where are we looking at another season where Vince Velasquez is going out there every fifth day?
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people weren't happy with him coming back, and I thought he was definitely, there was a chance they would non-tender him, but at the same time, I think he's projected to make like $4 million. And I mean, there are a lot of options out there, but if you look at what some of these starters have been getting, I mean, they're still getting like $7-8 million on 1 year deals. So it's not the worst value. I mean, you probably don't want him to be a full-time reliever at that price, because, you know, I don't know how well that would translate beyond being like a two inning guy. He really doesn't have experience beyond that. But as a number five starter, like, I think also, like, people need to keep in mind too, like, a number five starter is a number five starter for a reason. There's something about them that is preventing them from being more consistent to a, you know, a top three arm. So yeah, naturally there are going to be frustrating outings. But for that value, I mean, I think it's a worthwhile gamble for a team that is clearly trying to cut payroll costs and, you know, is financially trying to keep things in check. So it'll be interesting. He gets another new pitching coach. Maybe they're able to unlock something. I mean, I do think he did take some steps forward on the mental side of things. I feel like in the last year or so, we haven't seen as many like innings just like in 0-60 get out of control for him, where, you know, he's cruising and then the next five guys reach. I think he's done a better job of reining that in. And I mean, we can't rule out either that, you know, maybe Dombrowski moves him for something else to add strength somewhere else on the roster. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of factors.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about the bullpen, which was historically bad in 2020. Everyone knows. There have been names floating around there. I believe Trevor Rosenthal on the market. Brad Hand cleared waivers back in the earlier part of the offseason. Now, I wasn't necessarily surprised, like you said, that the Phillies didn't want to spend money on him, but perhaps no one with a bigger need for someone coming off a career year like that. I believe it was $10 million for him. Was it surprising, or maybe not at all, because of the pandemic, that not even some, no team at all even put in a claim for him? And will these relievers kind of just sit on the market for a while, or do the Phillies need to act fast if they want to bolster their bullpen in 2021?
I mean, I think it depends what their strategy is. I mean, it kind of sounds like they're going to try and throw numbers at it again, which has not worked in the last two-ish years. But there are a lot of arms available in free agency. It is going to be interesting to see, like, how many, if any, of the top arms do they, you know, how seriously they do they pursue a Liam Hendricks? Do they, you know, see if Brad Hand is, you know, willing to take a little bit less than, you know, what nobody claimed him for? You know, I think it's pretty telling, though, that in my beat partner Matt Gelb's story somewhat recently, you know, he mentioned about how the front office was asked if, you know, they had any interest in Reds closer Rafael Iglesias, and, you know, his $9 million price tag for this upcoming year was deemed, you know, too much. So that isn't exactly encouraging. I do think, you know, obviously Dombrowski's presence changes some things, and he clearly has identified the bullpen as a major issue. So I do think they need some other proven guy besides Hector Neris, because otherwise you're really banking on trying to find a diamond in the rough on, you know, non-roster invites combined with internal young guys who, you know, showed flashes of things last year, you know, like Connor Brogdon and Ramon Rosso and Jojo Romero. But I mean, that was such a small sample size that it's hard to say whether how much of that you can truly trust for next year.
On the other side of the break, I get Megan's take on what she's expecting in terms of how much of the Phillies front office will change with the hiring of Dave Dombrowski. Will he bring in his own guys? How much of the organization does he really have to learn about? How much of the old regime will stay in place, this old regime that we have all come to love and just really embrace over the past 5 years, being completely sarcastic, of course. But first, I did want to tell you about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. Built Bar, there are 18 amazing flavors, including 6 new ones, 12 originals. My personal favorite flavor is the cookies and cream. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, and they're soft and easy to chew. Built Bars are healthy. Perhaps the best thing about these things is how healthy they are. They're great for the health-conscious guy or girl, and they will help you lose or maintain weight, I should say, while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calories, low sugar, high in protein, high in fiber, and they're great for anyone on a diet. Go to www.builtbar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON so they know I sent you. Again, go to www.builtbar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off your first and next order at www.builtbar.com. Hey, what's up, everyone? Dan Wilson here from the Locked On Phillies podcast, letting you know about the newest podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's Locked On Bets. Betting on baseball or football, or now basketball's about to get up and started, doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag wherever you get your podcasts.
What's the kind of inside scoop on the ETA of someone like Sir Anthony Dominguez? And do you have any more kind of light to shine on that situation? It seemed like they delayed his surgery. He's going to miss parts of 3 seasons now. I think the updated timetable is at the earliest, maybe the All-Star break of this year. Is that someone who they can bank on getting any decent amount of work this year?
Yeah, I don't think he has surgery until July of this year, I think. So You know, I would say maybe then at the earliest he comes back in August. That's assuming there's no setbacks and, you know, that they're pretty aggressive with his approach. So I don't think you can count on him being a contributor this year. I would not be surprised if he doesn't come back until the following year. Obviously, they still see some sort of value in him because they tendered him a deal. But I don't think you can build your bullpen and be like, okay, you know, come August, we're getting this great arm back, because there's no guarantee what he's going to look like, you know, because it has been quite a while since he's actually been pitching healthy. So it's really hard to gauge what he might look like. So, yeah, I'm not optimistic that, you know, he's back before August.
Do you get the sense that as we kind of move further into this offseason, we're, you know, December, we're on the latter half of December now, we're going to run through the holidays, and before we all know it, it'll be January, that Dombrowski is the kind of guy who is going to want to make like a big first impression move, or is he going to kind of just wait this thing out? Like, what are we looking at timetable wise before we get some news here?
Well, I mean, he talked about how his first priority is really evaluating the organization top to bottom, and really doing a critical self-assessment of, you know, where the organization is, how they got to this point. So that's definitely going to take time to talk to people about that within the organization. And you have to hope that they give honest assessments of what went wrong. Because if they don't, then it's going to be hard to correct some of those problems. And yeah, I don't think Dombrowski is really the guy that needs to do something to make a statement. I mean, his track record speaks for him, for itself. And at the same time, I mean, there's only so much they can do. I mean, if they're not rebuilding and they're retooling, you know, that implies that they're going to make, you know, some complementary moves to enhance the roster, rather than, you know, they're not, as Dombrowski said, they're not one player away, and they're not rebuilding. So I wouldn't expect anything crazy. I really think that, you know, if they make a big move, it's going to be re-signing Real Muto.
In terms of kind of who that supporting cast will be, obviously he's asking people already with the organization to help assess. We know that Klintak stepped down, at least for the time being, remained in the organization. Ned Rice was there in an interim role. How many of his advisors or are the lower level front office positions going to be people the Phillies already had in place? How much of an influence is Dombrowski going to get of his own guys? Like, what's kind of going to be the mix here? And is he someone, as far as you can tell, who makes decisions himself? Does he use a team, and who would possibly be in that team of decision makers?
Well, I mean, it sounds like as of now, he's not going to necessarily bring in a bunch of people. I mean, I would expect at some point that he's going to bring in, you know, at least a couple who he's worked with in the past that he trusts. But at the same time, I mean, he may sound like, you know, he's going to evaluate everything. He's not going to come in and get rid of a bunch of people. So presumably, you know, Ned Rice, you know, as an interim GM, will still have a strong voice in conversations about roster stuff. And obviously Klintak is still involved, even though he doesn't have an official title at this point. And, yeah, so and that's part of it too. Like, you know, he has to evaluate, the people around that are going to be around him and see what they add to things. So I'm not expecting a lot of changes immediately, at least based on what he said in his press conference.
Is there a reason, from a fan's perspective, obviously many people have, you know, many opinions about the front office that attempted the last rebuild and seemingly failed at getting this team to where they wanted to get it to go. Is there a reason to be optimistic that Dombrowski will value their opinions at whatever value that is, maybe reassess how they evaluate some things, and we'll be able to get this team over the hump of what they've already essentially attempted to do?
Well, in terms of like, if you're someone that's in that organization right now, I mean, as long as you have a job there, you have to believe that your opinion will be valued. Otherwise you probably won't be working for the organization that much longer. So that's definitely a layer of it. And I think if you're looking for optimism, I think the biggest thing is you're hiring a guy that has shown he can do it. I mean, I know he's not the young up and comer, that might be more intriguing. I mean, I will say that is one downside to this hire, that, you know, he's 64. You know, how long reasonably is he going to do this? I mean, he has a 4-year contract. How much longer would he stay beyond that? So you're potentially setting the organization up to go through change again in less than 5 years and potentially bring in another person with a different vision and voice. And so I do think a lack of stability is one of the things that can hurt an organization. So it'll be really interesting to see kind of how that turns out.
Obviously hard to see into the future, but the guy's 64, as you mentioned, it's 68. If he sees this whole contract through, is there a scenario where they bring him back beyond that? If they basically haven't won a championship or they're not knocking on the door of one at that point, like if they're in a similar spot they are now 4 years from now, is there a scenario in which they would continually bring him back?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big question. I mean, and he still has interest in helping that Music City group to bring a team to Nashville. And that's something that around that time could be more feasible and you know, getting re-involved with that venture. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, and I think the bigger question too is it kind of coincides with, you know, I think at that point, Nova will be a free agent. I think, I can't remember what year his
2023 is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think that will coincide with him becoming a free agent. That would be 4 years from now. Wheeler's deal would be ending because he's on a 5-year deal. So, I mean, that would be a real turning point for the organization where, like, either you have built a perennial winner or you're going to have to tear all that again. And you're stuck with a guy in Bryce Harper that's making, you know, $25 million a year still for the next few years after that. So, yeah, I mean, I would say that either they're on the track towards another rebuild or they're on the track of finally getting over that playoff hump. And it has large implications for the organization as a whole in these next 4 years.
Yeah, I was going to say you can mark your calendar for that winter. You're either going to be covering a team right on the brink of winning or potentially Bryce Harper demanding a trade because they haven't right. gotten, you know, it'll be a big make or break yeah. kind of point for the organization. In that sense, in terms of you were talking about, you know, whether this is basically they're making it a make or break window right here, right now. Is there anyone this Nashville project seems to be, it wasn't something that I actually knew a ton about until he mentioned in his press conference. I looked more into it. I know that there's been talks of expansion in all sports, not just baseball, kind of for years now. It doesn't seem like it's happening right here, right now. Are there any rules other than the fact that it's likely hard to split your time between running a Major League Baseball team and trying to start up another one? Are there actually any Major League rules that would prohibit him from going back and still assisting that from afar because it's like a conflict of interest kind of thing?
Yeah. So Jason Stark had a story come out today detailing basically how everything led to Dombrowski coming to Philly. And there was a line in there talking about how he might consult the group occasionally. It sounds like he just has to get approval from the Phillies and maybe MLB to do that. So presumably he will get that okay and give them guidance as needed. But it sounds like the main things that they would need him for aren't going to come to fruition for a while since, you know, they still need to, I believe, you know, secure where they might even build a stadium and all that.
And then if that were to happen again, we're talking way, way down the line. And again, I don't know how much you know about this situation. Would that mean that they would go to, I mean, talking about Major League Baseball realigning, are they going to 32 teams? Hockey had 31 for a few years, but it's odd. Like, is there other cities in the mix here that also have to kind of get their act together at the same time?
Yeah, I'd assume they would go with 32 to keep it even. I know Portland has been working to secure funds and an area to build a stadium. So Nashville and Portland are the two that I know of that have been like actively working to do that.
Okay. Yeah. And then you're talking about, you know, 16 teams in each league, realigning divisions. Do you do what football does, like four divisions of four? It would be certainly interesting, something to keep an eye on. Megan, thank you so much for your time and kind of helping us run through all these topics today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's a wrap on my conversation with Megan Montemurro. Again, great, as always. Definitely appreciate her time in allowing me to kind of tap into her mind a little bit about what she's expecting with this Phillies organization as we kind of just progress through this offseason. So much uncertainty around Major League Baseball as to what the 2021 baseball season will look like. Some of that is in their control. Some of that is out of their control. But we as fans and we as observers of the game, certainly with a lot of question marks and a lot of question marks for this Phillies team as well. I think the Phillies addressed their biggest need all offseason. I've been pretty clear about that day in and day out. They needed to get a team president. They do. I'm a little skeptical about the decision itself, but at least they have someone that isn't Andy McPhail, that isn't Ned Rice, that isn't Matt Klintak running the ship. And look, he does have a history of winning. So if that can shed into the Phillies organization, regardless of how he gets there, if he can get the Phillies back to the days of 2007 to 2011, when, of course, they won the World Series and were winning division titles every year, make Citizens Bank Park the electric atmosphere that we all know it can be. That is ultimately what we're all looking for, but he's got a tough task ahead of him. That'll do it for this edition of the Locked On Phillies podcast. Have a great weekend, everyone. I'll talk to you next week.